Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Civil Rights and Free Speech and Election Law Practice Groups, was recorded on Thursday, January 29, 2015, during a live telephone conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members. Welcome to the Practice Group's telephone conference call. Today, we'll be discussing voter integrity and voter ID. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. Please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Also, we're recording this call for use as a podcast in the future. We're very happy, indeed thrilled, to welcome to our call today our expert, the Honorable Edwin Meese III. He is the Ronald Reagan Distinguished Fellow Emeritus at the Heritage Foundation. He's also the former Attorney General of the United States, having served as the country's 75th Attorney General under President Ronald Reagan. For Governor Reagan, he served as, among other things, executive assistant and chief of staff, and as legal affairs secretary. He's also served in his past as a deputy district attorney in Alameda County, California, so he's had a great deal of experience and insight on both federal and state governments, and he's got a lot of credentials here to speak to us on voter integrity and voter ID. We're just thrilled to have him with us today. He's going to give us some opening remarks, about 10 minutes, but as always, we'll be turning to the audience for your questions and comments, so please do be ready with those. And with that, Attorney General Meese, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Dean. It's a pleasure to be with you and all of the people who are listening today to this teleforum. It's a real honor for me to be participating in the work of the Federalist Society. Since its earliest days in the 1980s, the Federalist Society has been a champion of good jurisprudence, of freedom for of political integrity, and for basically preserving our constitutional republic that we have in this country. And, of course, today we're talking about a very important topic as far as preserving the Constitution and the rights that all of our citizens have. And that is this topic of election integrity, as Dean mentioned. Free, fair, and honest elections, of course, are the key to preserving democracy as the system of exercising political liberty that we have in our form of representative government. We combine, interestingly enough, the names of the two political parties when we call our system a democratic republic. And that is because the people of our country are able to vote for their leaders, who then in turn represent those people in the various aspects of our federal government. Also, they represent, of course, the people's views in governments not only at the national level, but also at state and local levels. And so it means it's very important then for people to be exercising their rights to participate in government by having honest voting. Every American citizen who is eligible should be able to vote. But it's equally important that every citizen's vote not be diluted or stolen through fraud, especially fraud that could change the outcome of an election. So election integrity really is fundamental to securing free and fair elections and to preserving our constitutional form of government. Now, as we look at that, we can see that there are various things that people can do to ensure that integrity in the election system, and so we'll be talking about that today. But I think the important question that you ought to be asking yourself is, does my vote count? And that's what we're talking about today when we talk about the importance of fair elections, talking about election fraud, and talking about what's necessary to combat that. Of course, some people claim that there's no such thing as election fraud. History and every survey, particularly recent surveys, show that that's absolutely not true. As a matter of fact, unfortunately, fraud has been a part of elections for both at the state and local level, as well as in federal elections, for a long time in too many parts of our country. The National Commission on Federal Election Reform recently said the problem is not the magnitude of voter fraud, because in close or disputed elections, and there are many, a small amount of fraud can make a very great margin of difference. Well, that's certainly true. There have been several elections as late as 2014 in which numerous elections have been decided by one vote or even in some cases tied. So that's why election integrity is such an essential part of free and fair elections. You know, it's interesting that the U.S. Supreme Court itself said that flagrant examples of voter fraud have been documented throughout the nation's history by respected historians and journalists. And indeed, if we go back all the way back in 1844, for example, there was an election in one situation in New York City where they had the infamous Tammany Hall, which was a corrupt political organization. And in one election in 1844, there were more votes recorded than there were eligible voters by quite a margin. And so those early traditions of voter fraud have continued, and in some cases have become even more inventive. In 1984, not too long ago, a state grand jury report that was released in New York that found a 14-year-long successful voter fraud conspiracy that had resulted, as the grand jury found, in thousands of fraudulent votes being cast in New York legislative and congressional elections through such things as impersonation of voters, false registrations, and other typical examples. Now, one of the reasons that this is happening is that too often the people in charge of voting systems in our various states are not careful to be sure that the precautions that need to be taken against voter fraud are not being taken in between elections. In other words, purging the voter rolls, the list of people who are eligible to vote, to take care of people who are dead, to take care of other situations. That's why a recent study found that 24 million registrations, nearly one in eight in this country, are inaccurate, out of date, or duplicates. In fact, they found that 2.8 million people are registered in two or more states, and that 1.8 million people who voted in a recent election within the last 10 years actually no longer are living. And so that's why you can have various means of fraud or improper voting in terms of elections. There's, of course, impersonation fraud at the polls, that is, where somebody comes and votes other than the actual person who is registered. You can have false registrations, that is, people who are ineligible vote for in the names of others. There can be duplicate voting. We had a situation here where a public official was voting in two different states, in Maryland, not far from our nation's capital. We've had situations throughout the country in the fraudulent use of absentee ballots. And as more states are going to allowing absentee ballots or even having ballots by mail, the opportunities for fraud are even greater. There is, of course, the old idea of buying votes. A lot of people wonder why some states have no serving of alcohol on election day. Well, that's because there were times in the past where people would go into bars and offer to buy people a drink if they would then go and vote in somebody else's name in the election that was taking place that day. Or even just voting for one particular candidate if, again, they were bought a drink. There's another thing involving illegal assistance at the polls themselves. In other words, people offer to help other people vote when, in fact, they are utilizing that means of influencing the vote of others rather than the way in which they themselves, the actual voter, would like to vote or understanding who's voting and so on. Another way, of course, is altering the vote count. And that's why it's so important that every members of both parties have their inspectors and their watchers, their observers at the polling places to make sure that the vote count is accurate. And, of course, there's the whole business in petition elections where initiatives are taken or otherwise where there's voter fraud in getting petitions signed. Well, you could go into each state and find various situations. For example, in California, in a 2012 city council election, one candidate won by four votes. and then it was overturned after it was discovered that five registered voters had falsely claimed they were residents of the city when they registered to vote, which wasn't true. You had non-citizens who voted there and in other places. You have races literally in Washington, the state of Washington, where just a few votes decided the election, and then it was overturned the next time they had a recount, and then it was overturned again. So that's why it's so important that every effort is made to make sure that elections are honest and that elections are carried on in a way that justifies the truth in terms of what the people's actual desires are in terms of their representative government, whether it's for president, member of Congress, or their state legislature, or their city councilman, whatever it is. Now, how do you secure the vote? There are a lot of ways, but one of the best and one of the most important is to have photographic, government-issued identification to vote. There's been a lot of controversy about this by some, but there's no question that this is the best way to guarantee that the person at the polls who is voting is the same person who is registered on the rolls and is indeed the individual himself or herself who is eligible to vote. That there is a lot of there are those who claim that somehow this suppresses the vote. Actually, every poll that has been taken, every example in actual elections has shown just the opposite. In fact, in many states, after they had a voter ID to be sure that the right people are voting, minorities actually voted in greater numbers than they had before. And in some states, the percentage of minority voters as opposed to white voters, the minority vote actually increased by a far greater percentage than the white vote. We all have heard of situations, as I mentioned earlier, where the number of voters was greater than the number of people who were registered or the number of people who actually, in some cases, resided in the particular community. And so that's why voter ID is one of the best protections against voter fraud. Other ways, of course, are proof of citizenship to register to vote so that right at the start we can make sure that only people who are eligible by being citizens of the United States can, in fact, vote. Another, of course, is to make sure that the databases themselves are regularly policed to be sure that people who are ineligible, non-citizens, people who have died, those kind of people are stricken from the rolls, to be sure that there are audits conducted on a frequent basis to make sure that the accuracy of voter registration lists are correct. Another is, of course, the Interstate Voter Registration Cross-Checks Program to be sure that people aren't voting in more than one state, and so on. So that's why I believe that the topic we're discussing today, in which I'll be happy to answer your questions, is one of the most important things we can think about. And so it's important that you talk to your family and friends about the importance of voting to start with, and then talk about the danger of voter fraud and make sure that in your communities, common sense steps are being taken to ensure election integrity. At the Heritage Foundation, where I'm privileged to work, we spend a lot of time on this topic. One of our experts, Hans von Spakovsky, is one of the nation's greatest experts, a former member of the Federal Election Commission. He has written and done a great deal of research, which is expressed in various documents that we have at Heritage. One of the most important documents is entitled, Does Your Vote Count? And it talks about the things that I've been discussing today, and particularly this subject of voter ID, and why voter ID and the other means that I've mentioned are essential to protect your vote and ensure the integrity of your of this election and future elections. So with that, I will stop talking on this introduction and open it up to answer your questions about the whole subject of voting, elections, and how we can preserve a constitutional republic, a democratic republic where everybody's vote counts.
Thank you very much, General Meese. That very helpful introductory remarks. Let's open it up to the audience for their questions. In a moment, we'll all hear an announcement that will say the floor mode is on. After that announcement, if you have a question, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone to indicate you have a question. So once again, if you have a question for Attorney General Meese, you need to push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. Our lines are open. While we're waiting to see who dials in, General Meese, you mentioned that the document is a pamphlet, Does Your Vote Count?, that's been produced by the Heritage Foundation. Is that available on the Heritage Foundation's website? How would our callers go about seeing that document?
Yes. That can be obtained just by using their website. It's www.heritage.org, and then /voter fraud. You can, through that means, request our booklet on and ask for the book entitled, Does Your Vote Count?
Good. Thank you for that. Now, again, if in our audience, if you have a question, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. We don't have any questions yet. Let me ask you, General Meese, it seems to me that one's position on the need for voter ID laws almost always or sometimes begins and ends with a discussion on the reality of voter fraud and the empirics around that. I have a copy of Does Your Vote Count in front of me. I picked it up when I was recently at the Heritage Foundation for a meeting. I think it does a great service because it cites a lot of the statistics you mentioned here today, but it also goes from one state to the next state to the next, not covering all 50 states, but describing some of those concrete examples, many of which have been adjudicated, of voter fraud. So I guess my question is, are the proponents of voter ID and voter integrity, are they making progress in the fight over the empirical argument? Is the other side conceding any ground there?
Well, the other side, unfortunately, seems to be stepping up their campaign to try to discourage states from having voter ID laws, photographic voter ID laws. And you wonder why some of these people, particularly liberals, particularly, unfortunately, the current administration, is so opposed to voter ID and election integrity. As a matter of fact, we've even had situations in which the Department of Justice, the United States Department of Justice, unbelievably, have tried to sue states to eliminate the integrity building by having voter ID laws. And so you wonder why. Does that mean that they're actually think that somehow they will gain in elections by having people cheat or by fraud? It's really unfortunate that we have some people in this country, particularly those people who are in public life, in public positions of responsibility, who don't understand why voter integrity is so important, why they don't recognize the reality of voter fraud. And as to that, for example, the Supreme Court itself had to deal with this issue of whether voter ID, voter identification, photographic identification, is appropriate, and whether it would suppress, for example, minority voting. And they found that based upon the facts that it would not. But also they found, as Justice John Paul Stevens acknowledged in a 2008 Supreme Court decision, flagrant examples of such fraud throughout the nation's history is not only shows that the risk of voter fraud is real, but also that it could affect the outcome of a close election. And, of course, as I mentioned earlier, there are plenty of examples of that. And so that's why it's so important, first of all, that people support state legislatures as they enact laws to prevent fraud by having photographic voter IDs, but also that they understand why it is important to oppose those people who would try to stop this form of maintaining fair and free and honest elections.
Very good. We've got a couple callers with questions now. If you'd like to join the queue, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. Let's go to our first caller.
Hello, General Meese, and first of all, thank you for your long and dedicated service to this wonderful country of ours. And my question has to do with, I was reading a few months ago about ACORN, and it's it's like Mark Twain, its death had been exaggerated. And it was frustrating to me to read this article because it said basically that although ACORN, that particular name, was out of action now, the same cast of characters had popped up in similar scenarios under different names. And it was like a case of whack-a-mole. And I'm wondering if you could comment on that and how that might be stopped. It seems that it's the bad penny that keeps on coming back again. Thanks very much.
Okay, very good question. By the way, thank you for your kind words at the start of your question. You're absolutely right. Unfortunately, fraudulent people, irresponsible people, people who don't believe in our system of government being conducted in a fair and honest way, are not easily stopped. And so, unfortunately, the kinds of people who are involved in the ACORN fraudulent activities have indeed come back under the guise of other organizations. They've changed their name, but they're still involved in fraud and other unscrupulous activities, which are contrary to the fairness of our government and our system of government. The best way, one of the ways, quite frankly, is because so many of these groups are actually sustained by federal funds, which they receive in one way or another. And one of the ways is for the government to get out of funding organizations like this really, in many ways, defund, and Congress should do this. First of all, it would help very much in reducing our deficit, but also it would take away the opportunity for unscrupulous groups like ACORN or other groups that have simply moved and adopted a new name. That's one way. Another is for vigilant citizens who see these fraudulent groups and also vigilant district attorneys and other officials at the local level take steps to put them out of action. It also would be very helpful if our federal government was more scrupulous in trying to stop this sort of thing. We saw situations, for example, where unfortunately in Philadelphia, you had situations where people actually had been found guilty of being involved in trying to intimidate voters and keeping certain types of voters that they thought would be voting what they viewed as the wrong way, keeping them out of voting booths. And yet, even though the courts had declared this activity illegal, the Federal Justice Department actually essentially threw the case and refused to follow up and to make sure that the civil punishment that had been meted out by the court was enforced. So I think it's important that people continue to voice their opposition to those people who are trying to provide the opportunity for election fraud, and instead people who are interested in fair elections should make sure that we have voter ID, report to the local officials cases of voter fraud or the enabling of voter fraud, and then themselves be very sure in their own locales that the various parties have their observers at the election polls to make sure that unfortunate or improper tactics are not being used at the election polls. That's the only way we can do it, but I think for the caller, your attention to what is going on here, where again, groups that have been found to be trying to illegally influence elections and have been found out, even though they have been declared by courts and by public officials as to what they were doing, that they have tried to again come around and by using different names try to continue their activities.
Right. Well, thank you, General. I appreciate it. I'm sorry I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Steve McCloskey from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Thank you.
Well, Steve, thank you, and thank you for your interest in maintaining fair elections. North Carolina has had some very important elections.
Yes, sir.
And so I'm sure that what you're doing, what your colleagues and fellow citizens are doing there is very important to preserving our constitutional form of government.
Thank you, sir.
We're speaking, of course, with Attorney General Edwin Meese, and we're taking questions now. If you have a question, you need to push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. We've got two questions pending. Let's take another call.
Hi, it's Andy Schlafly. Thank you, General Meese, for your great work over the years. I'd like to point out that early voting and voting by mail has become a huge problem, even a bigger problem, perhaps, than some of the traditional voting fraud that has occurred. And if states push into voting by mail and expanding early voting, then voter ID does not really help that much. I mean, if people are voting by mail and just dropping their ballot in a box over a 30-day period before Election Day, voter ID cannot help combat fraud that arises in that situation. Colorado has gone that route recently. Oregon's entirely voting by mail. And is there anything we can do to oppose this erosion of Election Day that has occurred, where now it's become a circus, like in Ohio, where in 2012 it was a voting ridiculous situation where over a 35-day period more than a million people voted even before Election Day? Do you have any comment on that, General Meese?
Yes, I certainly do, and you are very wise in raising this issue. I think that the move in some states, and I must say that unfortunately it's usually by Democrat Party legislators who have inflicted this on their own jurisdictions there. The whole idea of early voting and particularly mail voting is, I think, absolutely contrary to the move, the effort for fair, honest, and free elections. Now, they claim that it's to allow more people to vote. Well, there's nothing that really is worse than having more people voting if those people are fraudulent or if it's the same people voting more than once. And there's no question that early voting and particularly mail voting, voting by mail, is the absolute recipe for fraud and for improper election activity. As in particularly, we've seen the examples even with early voting or absentee ballots being easily available. There are situations which I know of personally where people have gone in, asked for an absentee ballot, and seen other people at the time getting whole groups, 20 or 30 absentee ballots, which they claim they'll take back to voters. Well, this is nothing more than a very clever way in which they can take those voters, ballots, and then vote for a particular candidate and send them in without ever having real persons at the other end, and one person fraudulently mark all the ballots and send them back. So it's very important, I think, that in the states where we have early voting, which enables people to vote in many cases several times, if they are involved in this kind of fraudulent activity. And certainly mail ballots are all conducive to fraud, and citizens really ought to take efforts, in my opinion, to try to change that and get back to our traditional form of balloting, our traditional form of elections, where people have to show up at polling places with proper identification, where there are observers making sure that the elections are being conducted in a fair and honest manner. That's the only way, I believe, that we will ultimately curtail the idea of voter fraud and get back to a much more honest and fair way of making sure that every person's vote counts, but only counts once.
And I take it, General Meese, I've heard this argument offered by some opponents of voter ID, that voter ID doesn't catch all the fraud, therefore they're opposing it. But it seems to me a pretty thin argument as to why you should oppose voter ID. If it does catch meaningful fraud, it should still be implemented. Is that your position? Or?
Well, that's kind of silly to say it doesn't catch them all. That's like saying we should do away with the police forces because we don't catch all the criminals and there's still crime. But there's no question, it's been proved, I think, in state after state, that where you have a photographic voter ID, that it has, in fact, cut down on the opportunities for voter fraud. There's just no question about that. But also, there's some people who claim, well, that this is a hardship for one group or another. But there are ways in which identification, photographic identification, is available. You take virtually every state, their Department of Motor Vehicles, or the whatever the department is that issues the driver's licenses, will also issue, for people who don't even drive, identification cards so that they have the photographic ID for purposes of voting. And in other situations, there are a number of other kinds of state or federal government-issued photo ID, including student IDs, often issued by college systems in the various states. A United States passport, for example, can be a means of showing a voter ID. An employee photo ID from any branch or department of the government, federal, state, or local government, a military photo ID, a tribal photo ID, whatever it is, there is no excuse for a person not to be easily able to freely get a government-issued photographic ID card. And the idea that somehow this doesn't eliminate all the fraud is just a phony excuse for those people who apparently have in mind some way of evading our laws against false voting.
We've got one question pending. If you'd like to join the queue, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. Before we go to our next caller, along that same vein, the line of thought you were just expressing, General Meese, I understand that most, or if not maybe all, of the state laws on voter IDs have provisions, two things that we haven't talked about yet. One, with regard to obtaining a valid voter ID, they have provisions that provide free voter IDs for people that can't afford otherwise to obtain and pay for the voter ID required. And secondly, there are almost uniformly provisional ballots that can be cast for people who've not been able to or who forget their ID on election day. They can cast a provisional ballot and later provide evidence of their identity so that their vote can be counted. Can you address both of those? Am I right about both of those?
You're absolutely right about both, and that is what I mentioned earlier, that people, for example, can go to the local Department of Motor Vehicles in their particular state and get a free identification card even if they don't drive. And as I mentioned, it is in fact free, so that there's no excuse for a person that claims that this is some sort of a burden on them. It certainly is easily done. And likewise, if a person does forget their identification, they can cast in most states, I believe in all the states, a provisional ballot. Although I must say that I think the observers there have to be sure that this also isn't a way in which people can commit fraud, is by claiming they have forgotten their voter ID card. If there's a whole lot of that, I think it's an indication that some people perhaps are trying to engage in a fraudulent activity. But there is really no excuse for a person not being able to vote, and that there are ways in which the photographic ID can be obtained, and also if it should be honestly forgotten, to cast a provisional ballot. So this is a means of allowing everybody to vote, but also, again, as I mentioned earlier, to restricting them to voting only once.
Very good. We're touching some nerves here, I take it. We've got four callers pending now, so let's take another question from our audience.
My name is Fred Young from Racine, Wisconsin, and quoting Kowalinski, whatever it takes, or Karl Marx, ends justify the means. General, you've had tremendous experience and are a keen observer of the scene. Personally, how cynical are you about leadership in the Democratic Party, knowing very well that their opposition to voter ID and promotion of early and mail voting and same-day registration and Obamacare registration used to get registration for voting facilitates fraud. How cynical are you about the persons in the leadership, the Democratic Party, knowing full well that this is going on and that by opposition to voter ID, they're promoting fraud?
Well, Mr. Young, I want to tell you, I'm not just cynical. I'm actually angry that people in political office who are representatives supposedly of the public are using their offices to try to oppose legitimate, honest measures that would help us to wipe out voter fraud. I think it's a mark of extreme dishonesty and false use of their offices to try to do that. And I guess maybe cynical indicates how everybody should be of that kind of a person holding office if they really are not interested in suppressing voter fraud. So I think you raise a very good point. It's a sad situation, I think, where people who have responsible offices are trying to make it easier for people to illegally or improperly vote or to vote in an improper way.
Thank you.
We've got three questions now pending, so let's continue to roll through these questions. Next caller.
Hi. Just wanted to give you the benefit of a little haiku about Halloween. When the veil between living and dead is thinnest, dead Democrats vote. We had here in Long Island, in Nassau County, apparently 400 dead people voted in one recent election. So.
Well, you make a good point there. There's an old joke that a man who died in North Carolina asked to be buried in Chicago so he could remain active in politics. Now, that's a joke, but in a sense it's no joke if people realize that unfortunately that happens. And the point you make there is the Halloween situation that you mentioned is a good way to point out that it's too bad that there are so many cases actually in which it has later been found that people who were dead had people fraudulently voting in their names. So it's a good reminder, even though it's a joke, that it's not funny when it comes to the results of elections that have been carried out with improper voting.
Now the word Republican doesn't fit in the haiku, so I aimed at the Democrat.
All right.
General Meese, you've mentioned the voter ID laws, and you've mentioned a problem with the rolls, the registration rolls. And I've heard the stories of jurisdictions where there are more registered voters than there are adult citizens, which is obviously a problem, no matter how you look at it. There does seem to be a lot of movement towards voter ID laws. Are you seeing any activity positively to clean up the voter rolls? I mean, you called for that, but what's the state of play there? Are the local and state jurisdictions working to clean up their voter rolls?
Yes, there are. There are some efforts being made, and one of the things that's happened is several of the secretaries of state or whoever is in charge of voting in a particular state, that these election officials, the chief election officials of the various states, and it is mostly secretaries of state, have in fact been working together to do two things. Number one, to make sure that the counties in their states, who are usually the responsible jurisdictions, clean up the voting rolls, and also providing systems of interstate checking to make sure that people aren't registered to vote in more than one state. So this effort by the honest secretaries of state or chief election officials in the states is going a long ways, and I think the more that effort continues and more states get involved, the more we have the opportunity to clean up the election system and to make sure that they are carried out in an honest way.
And you've mentioned opposition to voter ID laws. Is there opposition to these attempts to clean up the voter rolls? And if so, what's the ostensible objection?
You know, there was an attempt and has been an attempt by some unscrupulous people, very affluent people who put a lot of money into such things as electing secretaries of state who would be willing to go along with not doing the things necessary to prevent voter fraud. Unfortunately, that persisted, and there have been some situations in which state secretaries of state or chief election officials have not been committed to fair elections and have been involved in that sort of thing. I believe that there has been a lot of effort made by others now to be sure that the people who are running for these offices that aren't usually as prominent, Secretary of State, for example, and others who have the chief election officer responsibility, that they are campaigning for honesty in those particular positions. So I think that the more people learn about the importance of honest elections and the importance of the various measures that are necessary to combat voter fraud, and I believe that this effort is increasing and therefore making elections fairer and more honest throughout the United States. But it is important because there are those forces who are trying to use legislative systems and others to make it easier for fraud to happen.
Let's turn back to our audience now for another question.
Yes, hello. My name is Mark Casso. Let me just start by commenting on that last phone call message in terms of Long Island. I guess, put it in Eric Holder's terms, I guess 400 lightning strikes occurred on Election Day there. But on a more serious note, General Meese, I wondered if you could comment or give us some thoughts on two items that I thought might be of interest. One is, I think, the changing of the legal standard and its erosion from one person, one vote to this sort of popularized count every vote and every vote counts. And the second thought is, in terms of, in danger of bringing in another subject matter, but as possibly a vehicle, to call the Democrats' bluff on this immigration issue by putting in a robust provision on the integrity of federal elections and Election Day integrity as being germane to any issue dealing with immigrants and the right of citizens to vote.
Okay, you've raised, Mr. Casso, you've raised a couple of very important points. First of all, as the legal standard, indeed should be that every one person, one vote is a very important thing, and that ought to be the standard. But as to the way in which it's been changing is that we have to get back to the point of one honest vote for each person should be the standard rather than some other standard that makes it easier for people to cheat. And so I think what you've indicated there is we need to have people understand that there is voter fraud going on. We need to combat it. And that's why we get back to the idea of one person, one vote. The second thing in terms of immigration, the surveys have found, surveys by the census and by other election officials have found that unfortunately illegal aliens or people who have voted, who are immigrants, who are entered the country both legally and illegally, unfortunately, more often vote Democrat. And so I think that has something to do with the way in which some officials have unfortunately misused their office. So that point is a matter of fact, and therefore it's important, I think, in order to have fair elections to both parties, that the immigration laws be upheld for a lot of reasons. But certainly one of the reasons is also to make sure that our elections are fair.
We've still got three questions pending, so let's take another caller's question here.
Good afternoon. This is A.J. Ferrati in Oklahoma City, an attorney that's involved in election law out here. Thank you for the time today, General Meese. My questions go to some issues that we're actually facing here in Oklahoma. The first one is, this will be the second year that the legislature has had a discussion around the national popular vote. But more importantly, is a Republican state legislator who has proposed 9 different election law bills. Some you've spoken to around subjects such as same day election registration, mail-in ballots, and they are being proposed around the concept that we need to encourage more voter activity. Can you speak to this concept of voter activity and getting out a higher percentage of voters in light of the concept of balancing with ballot security?
Sure. Mr. Ferrati, I think there's no question that we want to have the maximum number of people voting. But at the same time, we also want to make sure that we don't have election fraud. And so it's a matter of balancing. And so we don't want to do things that would make it harder for people to vote. On the other hand, it's just like anything else. We have precautions that we take, for example, in the people's use of credit cards to prevent credit card fraud. And it obviously would be easier for people to use their credit card if we didn't have certain precautions taken. But at the same time, it would be a lot easier then for there to be theft. And so reasonable precautions, I think, and not doing things that make it easier to engage in fraud ought to be the rule, as long as they're not unreasonable barriers for everyone voting. But just making it easier to vote, if that also means to vastly increase the opportunities for fraud, are the same things as why we don't do things in other ways to increase fraud in other situations. And so I think a reasonable balance is necessary. And I believe that balance is in favor of having voter ID, in favor of not having either same-day registration or mail-in ballots. I think these are things that are necessary for preserving the integrity of elections. And so I think the balance indicates that making it easier for people to get voter ID cards, making it easier for people to get to polling places through the parties, providing transportation and that sort of thing, all of those kinds of things are all to the good. But making it easier for people or unscrupulous organizations to commit fraud is not the way to go. And I think that integrity in elections is absolutely the standard we ought to be looking for. And if people are doing things or legislatures are urged to do things that make it easier to cheat, then I think those ought to be discouraged and voted against.
Thank you,
sir. Getting lots of good questions here. We've still got 4 questions pending now, so let's take another call.
Attorney General Meese, I join everyone in thanking you for your lifelong service to this country. Along the lines you were speaking with a minute ago about immigration policy, I believe I read recently that there's a move afoot to allow non-citizens to vote in local elections in the District of Columbia. And, of course, there's lots of activity around giving driver's licenses to illegal immigrants. And I was wondering whether you thought that those efforts were tied to expanding the opportunity for fraud.
Very good question. In my mind, there's possible question that some people, at least, some of those who are urging both of these things, are willing to try to skew the elections in favor of their particular candidates or their particular party. And I think it is wrong in both cases. Non-citizens have no, as they say, skin in the game in the sense of having a sense of commitment to the basic laws, to the Constitution, that sort of thing, that citizens do. And likewise, providing the driver's license for a lot of reasons to illegal aliens only rewards them for not obeying the law on their entry into the United States. Now, in terms of whether that helps or hinders traffic safety is another debate. But I think that certainly to the extent that there are driver's licenses being issued to illegal aliens, there ought to be some clear identification on those cards. If the person is an alien, the question ought to be, at the point that the driver's license is issued, if a state wants to do that, at the very least, it ought to indicate that this person is a non-citizen who is getting that card, so in fact they will not then be able to use the card as a means of voting. So I think that both of the points you mentioned, that those kinds of laws that you suggest make fraud easier, and therefore, at the very least, in the latter case of driver's licenses, they should not be issued on the same basis as it would be to a citizen.
We've still got four questions pending, so let's take another call now.
Hi, General Meese. This is Roger Clegg at the Center for Equal Opportunity. It's great hearing from you, and really enjoyed your presentation. I wanted to ask you a question about Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act and voter ID. As you know, because you were around for this, Section 2 was amended back in 1982 so that, you know, to some extent it allows challenges to practices that have disproportionate racial results. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about whether voter ID laws actually have those results. I've heard it argued both ways. And then secondly, even if it does have some racial disproportionalities, whether in your view the good reasons for these laws would still allow them to be defended under the Voting Rights Act.
Well, first of all, Roger, I think all of the evidence that I have seen, at Heritage, Hans von Spakowski, who you know well, and other experts have, through their research, have found that the hindrance to voting among minority groups is simply not there, that in virtually every case that I know of, the minority groups have often voted in larger groups, or in larger numbers, percentage-wise, of their population after voter ID and other laws have been put into effect. But I would agree with you with the idea that even if there should be some diminution of the vote, I would think it would be better to look for other reasons, because overall the evidence doesn't show that. But even if it should be, an honest election, it has to be the primary criterion rather than simply having people vote, if that in fact means that a higher percentage of illegal votes, of fraudulent votes are cast, just as there in other ways we provide other barriers to fraud in other kinds of situations. The ability to vote is very important, but the ability to have honest votes is even more important, and I think that's a very critical factor in making the decisions on these kinds of laws. And also, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act was meant to make sure that it was honest votes that were being cast. It was not designed to be a means in which fraud would be more prevalent.
Thank you very much.
We've got about 5 minutes left, two questions pending at this point, so let's take another call.
This is Matt McReynolds of Pacific Justice Institute, and first of all, let me join the chorus of others in just saying that I think it can't be overstated, General Meese, what a tremendous impact you've had on our organization and so many other organizations across the conservative movement, so we're just tremendously in your debt for that. As far as a question goes, I wonder if you could speak briefly to the other side of the coin on voter ID as far as disqualification of valid signatures on petitions and other suppression of conservative votes and voters, perhaps similar to what we're seeing here in California with our efforts to litigate the disqualification of signatures on the school transgender bathroom bill. I wonder where else you're seeing similar problems like that happening across the country.
Well, thank you for the question and also for your service to the Pacific Justice Institute, which is an excellent organization preserving the rights of all the citizens of our country. Well, I would say this in terms of the disqualification of signatures on petitions. I think that, again, this is a matter where it's very important that observers from the people on both sides of a particular issue have the opportunity to make sure that, in fact, the people are registered, but that people who are registered not be deprived of signing. So there are some indications that there has been a misuse of the initiative process by false elections or by false signatures and that sort of thing, or by means on both sides, either to discourage people from signing petitions, false information being given as to what the petition is actually for, as well as false information to persuade people to sign. So I think this is a very important issue, and that's why I think the only way you can combat it is by having observers and having people who are neutral in terms of a particular issue, making sure that the process of both signing petitions and then checking on qualifications are also being carried out fairly. But I would think that just as voting is very important, the ability to use initiative and referendum devices is also important, and that's part of the total election process. So I think vigilance there to make sure that improper means are not being used in any ways, then that also becomes equally important in terms of assuring the integrity of the election process as a whole. So I think your concern about this is well placed, and that's why we have to make sure that every effort is made to be sure that our systems are honestly carried out, whatever part of the process is involved.
Let's take now our final question.
Good morning. This is Manny Klausner from Los Angeles, from the from Reason Foundation and the Individual Rights Foundation. It's been a wonderful opportunity to hear you again in action here, Attorney General Meese. And I wanted to ask one question that occurs to me, and I don't think I didn't hear you cover it this morning. I was just curious, as far as the background and what animates this movement to continually raise the issue of voter fraud. What's your assessment? Do you think it's based on a genuine but mistaken concern as to voter suppression, or do you think it's basically just a cynical attempt to manufacture an issue to stimulate voter turnout? What do you think?
Well, Manny, I know you've been a real fighter in your own work for honesty in elections, honesty actually, and for better following of our Constitution. So I appreciate your question and you participating here. I think you have some of both. I think, to be honest, there are people who genuinely have been taken in by the propaganda that somehow voter ID laws and other similar protections against fraud are suppressing the vote. I think there's some of that, and I think that can be dispelled by just looking at the facts, by proclaiming the facts, getting information out about the facts to show that this isn't true. On the other hand, I think there are some people who have an unscrupulous purpose, who really want to make it easier for certain groups within our society to practice election fraud. And unfortunately, there are some people who in politics will do anything to win, even if it is unfair, unscrupulous, and illegal. So I think it's a little bit of both, but I think that's why it's important that the facts be gotten out. That's why it's important for people to, if they're interested in the topic, to get the information from the Heritage Foundation and other similar groups as to what the facts are, and then to be sure for the support of legislators who are honestly concerned about voter fraud and want to take reasonable common sense precautions. If you can need a photographic identification to cash a check, to get in a government building, or to get on an airplane, it seems it's not too much to ask that you have the same kind of identification in order to exercise one of the greatest privileges and one of the most important duties of citizens, and that is the right to honestly vote. And so I think that for that reason, I think your question is a good one, but I think it's also one that would support having necessary precautions to make sure that we have integrity in our elections.
Thank you.
Well, General Meese, this is Dean Reuter again. I want to thank you so much. As I said at the outset, we're thrilled to have you on the call today. I certainly appreciate your time. You've been very generous with your time. To our audience, a reminder that much of what General Meese was talking about, at least in his opening remarks, is based on the Heritage Foundation pamphlet, Does Your Vote Count, is the name of that pamphlet, and it's available on the Heritage Foundation website. Also for our audience, a reminder about our next upcoming Teleform conference call that's scheduled for tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. It's a Courthouse Steps edition of Teleform, and we'll be looking at the recent Supreme Court decision, Teva Pharmaceuticals versus Sandoz. That's tomorrow at 1 p.m. But until that next Teleform conference call, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.